Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. There's nothing more nocturnal than the sound of a saxophone on a Saturday night. We're here with Frank Catalano. Thanks for coming in, Frank.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dave.
And how you been? I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. It's good to see you. It's everything has been going very well, very hustle bustle, bouncing around for both of us, you know.
Tell us about that track you just played.
That is called Burner's Blues. And I titled it that for the late, great Charles Erland, whose nickname was Mighty Burner or The Burner. And I started playing with Charles mid-90s between Andy's Jazz Club and the Green Mill, and then he took me all over the place with them. So I wanted to write a song in his honor.
Tell us about Charles. I was a fan. I saw him a few times. I've got his vinyl. But how'd you hook up with him? And tell us about the B3. And there's, look at who's outside.
Oh, yeah. Anthony Potenzo.
Yeah. Tony Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Tony. And Anthony. Oh, God. That's too funny.
We should bring them in anyway.
I think if they're up for it, that would be fun. Yeah. So.
I know one of them's sober.
So, anyway. I had a couple glasses of wine with my wife at dinner, but that's about it on this end. So, yeah. Maybe after. But, I met Charles actually at Andy's Jazz Club. I was still in high school, and I heard on the radio that he'd be there. My mom took me and brought my saxophone, and his saxophone player didn't show up that night. So second set, he's like, hey, do you want to sit in? And I'm like, sure. And he hired me for 500 or 600 gigs from that night on, and a couple albums and a bunch of cool things. So
what clicked?
I just like to improvise, like kind of like you asked me, you know, what I wanted to play today. I just don't think about it. I just kind of show up and play. So, in playing in his band specifically, I mean, improvising in jazz, but his band specifically, he would just go into stuff that, you know, nobody really knew what he was going to do but him. And I like that challenge of just kind of jumping in and following stuff or coming up with stuff. So to me, it was super cool, and we clicked right away. And I learned so much from him and all the great players that were in his band.
Now, your current CD, God's Gonna Cut You Down, with the cover art from somebody who's lurking around outside, Tony
yes.
Fitzpatrick, you got the B3 on there.
Yep,
with Jimmy Chamberlain. So tell me about this ensemble.
Yep, Demos Petropoulos, the Ham B3 player on there, I've been playing with him for 20 years. He's on the next album that's coming out too, and amazing. And Jimmy Chamberlain from the Smashing Pumpkins is my longtime friend, and we've been playing for quite a while together, and is, you know, just amazing drummer, and drums up a storm on this one, the one coming out. And we did one called Love Supreme Collective that came out in 2014, was number one on iTunes, did great, and that was like a John Coltrane tribute, so a little bit more kind of straight ahead.
It's like Tony Fitzpatrick. This is like is when, like when Bob Hope came on the Johnny Carson show. So, all right, get back to work. Anthony, how are you? Grab a. What's it like for you to? What's it like to play with people from different styles and stuff? Like when you hook up with Jimmy?
Well, I don't know if it's even different styles so much, because I think when everyone's playing, you know, everybody finds a common ground musically. So yeah, his background is as a rock drummer, but he can play anything. So I don't even think it's necessarily a different style. It just depends if people kind of mesh up or not, and I feel like we do, luckily.
And this is doing very well. It's number one on iTunes. It was number one on the Billboard jazz charts.
Yep.
And how can people?
How debuted at number two? Frank is being modest.
They let you guys through security. That's great. How are you doing, Anthony?
We were driving by and we saw you guys in here.
But here we are.
Well, that was always you. We're all here. How did you guys hook up? Tony,
you know what, Frank, I knew Frank from the neighborhood when I had my studio on Damon Avenue, and we became friends. And I had been a big fan because I'd seen him at Andy's, I'd seen him, in my estimation, I think he's the best living saxophone player. You know, I say, and I thought, you know, I've always wanted to do a jazz cover I'm always and luckily the stars kind of aligned, and Frank said, "Hey, do you really want to do a jazz cover?" So I've been doing them, and then and plus the Love Supreme project,
yep.
The new record. It's, you know, Love Supreme, these standards, these classical things, and he like breathed new life into them.
Frank,
right when you think that can't happen, you know, along comes Frank Catalano. You know.
Frank, how old are you, Frank?
39.
39. And you're the only known sax man to have, but while still in high school, I read this,
yeah,
to perform with Miles Davis, Stan Getz, Von Freeman, Tito Puente, Tony Bennett, to name a few. How did all that happen?
Louis Belson, yeah. The drummer everybody hated, what is his name? Buddy Rich.
Buddy Rich,
yeah.
Frank, how did all that happen at such a young age?
If there is one person that deserves all the credit, it's saxophonist Von Freeman. Because I was, Von says 8 years old, but I think I was 9 or 10. And I went over to Andy's Jazz Club, and he was playing. And I was just mesmerized. And he said, come back, you know, next month. He was doing like a one Saturday a month, and bring your saxophone. And I'm like, okay. So my mom took me, and he got me up on stage. And he wasn't playing saxophone on the particular song. It was Charlie Parker's Now's the Time, I remember. And he was like scat singing to me, and then I was supposed to play fours back at him, you know, on the saxophone. And it was so cool, and he just kind of took me under his wing and introduced me to everybody. So he introduced me to Miles Davis. He had played with Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, everybody like in the 40s in the Pershing Ballroom, and is on all those Savoy recordings with them. So it was kind of like having a, a jazz ambassador as kind of like a big brother, you know, mentor.
How cool is it to have been in the same room with Miles Davis, much less played with him?
I mean, it's very humbling. I think I was so scared at the time. I don't even know if I really soaked it in.
Are you looking forward to the movie? Don Cheadle is yeah, playing Miles.
Yeah, right.
I'm definitely going to see it. I'm excited about it. So
from what I hear, it's a stellar stand-up performance, too.
We got to take a break for some spots. You can come back with another tune?
Sure.
Okay, don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal with Frank Catalano. Well, our guests have left the building. It was nice of them to drop in there.
Totally. Yeah. I'm very excited.
So tell us about that song.
That one's called Shaken, and it's the first track on the God's Gonna Cut You Down album. And I just kind of wrote it because I felt like I needed something fun for the late night Wednesday Green Mill shows that I do a lot. And I wanted something that, you know, if it was a kind of a more fun crowd later at night, people are kind of having fun. If they want to dance to something, it's a fun one to dance to. So I called it Shaken, and everywhere we go, people always seem to like when we play it. So it's definitely, especially with a full band, you know, high energy, pretty fun song. Kind of on the order of maybe a Eddie Harris, because it's, you know, it's kind of funky, but it is straight ahead jazz where we're definitely, you know, playing out and throwing down pretty hardcore.
It's funny, I was going to ask you that question about how environment influences the sound, influences the music. Do you find that at different clubs you play at? I mean, the Green Mill is so rich with environment and a vibe and stuff. Yep. What's it like for a musician to play that room?
I've had some people tell me that the room shouldn't matter and that you should be bringing your own vibe and all that. And I respect and appreciate that side of it. But for me personally, if you're soaking in everything that's going around, like going on around you, it's almost impossible to not have different places influence how you play. And for sure, like you say, the Green Mill, such not only rich history, but you walk in there and you feel everything from good vibes to ghosts to people having martinis to, you know, whatever it might be, you feel a lot of stuff, or at least I do. And when I'm on the stage playing, I really feel like I play differently there than I do other places. I know Jimmy Chamberlain, the last time we played there, he's like, we definitely have to record next time, like do a live recording, because there's just something that happens that's different from any other room, different from any studio, and it's more than just the audience. I mean, obviously the audience being into it affects your playing a lot too, and it reciprocates energy and all that, but that room specifically has something real special that I can't quite describe, and it's more than just history and cool Art Deco decor, or however you want to say it. There is a real, I don't want to say for sure like supernatural or ghosts or whatever, but when you start playing, you feel stuff, and in a really cool way, nothing bad or whatnot, but you definitely feel a different level of energy than, say, if you were maybe going to play in, a different venue or maybe a jazz festival or something.
Have you ever been to Baker's Keyboard Lounge in Detroit?
I've played there with Charles Erland. Charles Erland passed away in 99, so it's been a long time. But, yes, that place is awesome.
That's in my book on soul food and the civil rights movement. They got great macaroni and cheese there that actually was brought in from Army and Lou's formerly here in Chicago. But, yeah, that place is another place I think of with a vibe.
Totally.
With the piano-shaped bar.
Totally.
And Eddie Jefferson was shot to death right in front of there. Did
I
you
didn't
know
even
that?
Know that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, so that's another place I think of that has a really distinct vibe and stuff.
We just played in Detroit at a place called Cliff Bell's.
That's in my other book. The Supper Club. Yeah.
That definitely has it's like a larger version of the Green Mill, but
well, you know
a
what?
Lot of the same wood.
They told me that when they were redoing Cliff Bell's, it has a history
really?
That goes way back. But they went and they studied the Green Mill, and they kind of used
the
Green Mill as a template to redo Cliff Bell's.
There's a similar feeling, when I'm playing there for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Now you're going to be going to Japan.
We have a couple gigs in New York again next month. A place called Bonafide on 52nd Street. We just played there last month. Great new club, New York's newest jazz club. It's awesome. So I'm kind of doing a regular residency there, and then doing the Blue Notes and Cotton Club in Japan. We have 8 shows. So that's going to be really good.
Boy, you're a busy guy.
That's going to be super fun.
We were lucky to get you tonight.
No, I'm glad you asked me, because this is so cool.
All right, we're going to take a break here for the news with David Jennings, and you come back. I want to talk to you about some root stuff, about you growing up in Chicago, another tune, so you
cool.
can hang around.
Done.
Okay, thanks, Frank. We'll be back with more Nocturnal Journal after this. Thank you. Resplendent. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. That's Frank Catalano. Excellent.
Yay.
What was that?
That's called Toontown, and that's off the new CD as well. So that's one I wrote actually quite a while ago when I was playing with trumpet player Randy Brecker as just kind of a fun way to start the sets and kind of get things kicked off. I've kind of adapted it and changed it over the years a little bit. So we decided to record it for this last album that came out about 6 months ago.
God's Gonna Cut You Down.
Yeah.
Tell us about the title track.
Well, I think Jimmy Chamberlain and Demos, when we were recording it, thought I was crazy. But it is, you know, 150-year-old gospel song. I always loved Johnny Cash's version. And I thought, well, you know, most of the stuff we play, you know, are things that I write. Some of the stuff is standards. Like the next album has a few standards on it, as were the last couple really haven't. But I wanted to do something that was kind of a standard or staple, but not necessarily a jazz standard. So I thought most people know this song. For sure, people that are into gospel music. For sure, people that are into Johnny Cash. And a lot of other, great people have recorded it throughout the years. So I thought, like, well, what if we can come up with our own kind of jazzy arrangement of it? So,
you know, I've talked to you socially. I've never interviewed you before. But what I'm learning is it's how important it is to keep your ears open to other styles. You
totally.
Know what I mean, in rock, I mean, that's why I like Neil Young. He does a lot of different things, you know. How does that play for you? I mean, I know it, you must have internal growth as an artist by doing that, but how do, like, quote-unquote purists look at that? What's your world like incorporating all these different types of
no,
genres?
That's a great question, because early on in my career, I got signed to Delmark Records when I was a teenager, and my first album called Cut It Out came out, I think I was 18, had Ira Sullivan on it, who, you know, used to play with Charlie Parker and just, you know, legendary jazz guys. And it was more of a mainstream kind of traditional bebop type album, largely because that's where my passion was at the time. So I'm real proud of that album, even though it's over 20 years old now, and I really love it. And I know Delmark has, you know, reissued it multiple times, and again, real proud of it. But as you, at least for me, as I started playing with more people, and I think, you know, growing as an artist, while I love playing traditional jazz and bebop, it became pretty apparent to me that jazz is, you know, to me, improvising, expressing yourself, you know, the groove, the swagger, the triplet feel, but there's no reason to not incorporate a bunch of other music. You know, my wife's Armenian. My father-in-law gave me all this Armenian music that I think is awesome. Jimmy, being a famous, you know, rock drummer, he knows more about rock than I do, so I love, you know, getting suggested from him on various things. My degree from DePaul University is in classical composition. I've studied all the great classical composers. So my thinking is, as an artist, you should be pulling from as many things as possible, and not be worried about what, you know, genre, or put, you know, boundaries on stuff. As long as it is, you know, to me, exciting and I'm passionate about it, I definitely try to draw from it. Ironically, I got all this critical acclaim when I was a teenager because I was staying more in a small or a little bit more narrow, like, traditional jazz parameter. And definitely, you know, the downbeats, critics' polls, all these things. And I'm a much better player now than I was 20-some years ago. But definitely, if people know that you're swaying from that, sometimes critical acclaim sometimes people feel, when you actually have more mainstream success like Billboard charts and stuff like that, that you're kind of selling out a little bit. I can just guarantee that I'm not selling out, and jazz numbers still aren't the same as pop numbers or anything like that. But I just try not to worry about what people think anymore. But definitely 20 years ago, I was kind of like, always getting really good critical acclaim. As we're now, I've noticed it's been more divided. Or there has been some people saying that I really shouldn't do stuff outside the jazz world. I'll tell you, it really started 10 years ago when I played on an album for Beyonce, John Legend, like all in the, like both in the same month. And being on both of those, I had a lot of critics kind of like bash me. Don't know why, because I think what I did was good, and it didn't detract from any of my jazz stuff, and I had a lot of fun doing it. And I got to, you know, put my music out there to more people, which hopefully helps propel jazz also. So I saw nothing but good things, but I did notice a backlash from a few people that had always been big supporters of me, so that surprised me.
Well, at the end of the day, jazz is about freedom of expression.
That's really what I think.
Jazz is freedom.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
And you can incorporate whatever you want, and if someone's telling you not to me that's absurd, but yeah.
Does it draw more, I mean, like Jimmy being in the band, does that bring in new listeners who maybe normally wouldn't listen to jazz or come to a gig and stuff?
It's been pretty cool because we're actually doing a Pledge Music pre-order campaign thing for like the vinyls and stuff right now. And somebody from England, I was getting out of the cab, you know, about an hour ago, sent a nice message saying like, hey, can we sign this to him? And he's obviously more of a rock drummer, but now he was saying how much he's getting into jazz and stuff because of us. So I can't say how many numbers, but from what I can gather, thousands of people that maybe never listened to jazz before, but who might be a Smashing Pumpkins fan or maybe just a music fan in general, but not a jazz fan, are now getting into it and really liking it. So that makes me feel really happy.
And how can people find the CD with the art by our friend Tony Fitzpatrick?
Of course.
Tony's, I'm sure they're listening on their
Tony's
way home.
Tony's the world's greatest artist, yeah. Hands down. So my website is catalanomusic.com, CATALANOMusic.com. If you go to Pledge Music and type in either Catalano or Chamberlain for Jimmy Chamberlain, that comes up with the pre-order for the next one. My Facebook fan page has orders, iTunes, Amazon.com, you know, a lot of outlets. So I guess with the magic of Google, if you type in Frank Catalano, this stuff will come up.
Tell us about the upcoming project.
Well, this one I'm really, really, really stoked about. It's the third one of me and Jimmy's. It's the third one that Tony Fitzpatrick has been nice enough to do the album art for. And it has Demos on B3 again, like God's Gonna Cut You Down. It has Nur Felder, who's one of my favorite guitar players. I met him at the Manhattan Winter Jazz Festival last year, and I asked him to be on it. And we're playing April 29th together at Club Bonafide in New York. He's on Sony and just a really great young guitar player. And then my mentor, who turned 70 recently, and I always used to watch him play on TV and was a big saxophone inspiration for me, David Sanborn, who was nice enough to play on a couple tracks. The song, the album title is Bye Bye Blackbird, and it's really kind of a dedication to Von Freeman, who was my biggest mentor, and also Eddie Harris, who, you know, growing up in Chicago and playing with Charles Erland, he'd come sit in with us at the Green Mill and a bunch of, you know, times, you know, shortly before he passed away. So basically, this is kind of an homage to Von Freeman and Eddie Harris, and I thought, well, the title track has to be Bye Bye Blackbird, because that was one of me and Von's favorite songs to play together, and Dave Sanborn plays on it with me and sounds awesome, so I'm really stoked about it.
What'd you hear about, what'd you like in Sanborn's tone and stuff? I told you I had some notes about him that I did not bring in the studio. And stuff. He's from St. Louis, isn't he?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As soon as I heard him, it was, you know, very powerful, and he was playing with, you know, a lot of rock guys, Eric Clapton, yeah. You know, Stevie Wonder, you could go on, and a lot of, you know, people that I was listening to, while they may be great jazz players, their sound didn't quite cut through with the, you know, more rock type musicians. And just like playing in Charles Erland's band, when you have two Leslie speakers blasting electric guitar, I always like the idea of, you know, somebody that has a cutting sound. You know, and I just loved the passion of the way he phrased, but it really was 20 years ago while I was in Charles Erland's band. We opened up for him at Columbus, Ohio Jazz Festival, and somebody was screaming Well, I was doing my solo, and I'm like, is this some drunk guy behind me or something? And I turn around, and it was Dave Sanborn, and people were, you know, clapping and stuff. And I got to talk to him for, you know, just a small amount of time, but he was asking about my mouthpiece, and we were talking, and I was just like, such a cool guy, and kind of getting some level of, you know, excitement or approval from someone who you really admire and respect. I just thought that was so cool. And then I was behind stage listening to him, his whole show, and really, there's like kind of that secondary sound or split tone in his sound that really buzzes and cut through. And he was pretty much the first person to do that. So I try to incorporate a little bit of that on the tenor. More alto players, I think, tend to do it to kind of maybe mimic him a little bit. Plus, the alto is a smaller bore instrument, so it's maybe a little easier at times. But I definitely put that in on some of my notes when I want to, you know, really give him some punch and goose him. Again, that's something that some people might like, some people might not like, but it's something that I think is unique, and it's cool, and it's, you know, way to express how I want that note to sound at that time. And that's something that I for sure was inspired by and learned from listening to Dave Sanborn.
We're going to take a break for some commercials. I want to talk to you about your roots before we get out of here at 11 o'clock so you can hang around a little bit longer.
Of course.
Okay, don't go away on Nocturnal Journal. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. We're here with Frank Catalano, and you would tell us about that song.
yeah, that's the title track, God's Gonna Cut You Down. And yeah, when I, especially when I mentioned to Jimmy Chamberlain that I think we should do a cover of that because I like the Johnny Cash version so much, he came up with the cool kind of kitschy drum groove, and we're just like, okay, here we go. This is pretty fun. So
sounds like a strip club thing you had going on.
Yeah. it easily could have turned into that.
Calumet City or something. So tell people where they can find the CD again.
My website, catalanomusic.com, CATALANOMusic.com. Basically, on Pledge Music, we have pre-orders for the new one with Dave Sanborn. That's just pledgemusic.com. If you type in Catalano or Chamberlain for Jimmy Chamberlain, that comes up. And yeah, just type it into Google because I know it's on Amazon, iTunes, you know, most places where they sell music.
I love to, in the time we have left, I'd like to talk about your roots, and I just love to deconstruct, like, the instrument. Like, what was your first instrument? Was it the tenor sax? I mean, how did music come into your life? It,
actually, my Aunt Deb, she played guitar and piano and organ in church, and
Where was that at?
Holy Ghost. Was pretty good. Pretty good player. So I was interested, and she would show me, you know, chords on the piano and not really how to read music yet, but just kind of, you know, some scales and some basic stuff. And I just loved it. There's just something about you do something and then a sound happens. And I just found it fascinating. So I actually then tried to play bass because I was given a bass. Didn't work out
electric
very well.
Bass,
electric bass.
Yeah, okay.
I tried playing a little guitar. Just wasn't as excited about it, although I thought it was cool. My friend had a trumpet. I tried to play it. It was okay, but up to now, I liked the piano the most. And then I saw the saxophone, and I didn't even know what it sounded like, but I knew I wanted to try playing one. My friend Gary Dorsey, who I have not talked to in 30 years, had one in his garage, and that was the first one I tried.
Where was that at?
That was in Hanover Park.
Okay.
So that was a little, you know, outside the city. And I would say after I was playing it for about, a month or two, I remember the first song I learned was Rockin' Robin, and I was about, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and I was playing that in grade school at the with the choir and stuff, and the music teacher was really nice, so she was just like, how long have you been playing for? And I'm like, oh, about a month, maybe a month and a half. She's like, there's no way. But learning piano first really helped, just, you know, give a sense of the music and stuff. And then the following year, I got a tenor saxophone of my own, and that's the one I play now. Even though I was only about this tall, it kind of like dragged on the ground. I just knew there was something about the way the neck part of the saxophone on the tenor goes up. I just was immediately drawn to
it. How old is that one you brought in tonight?
This one, actually, Yamaha makes my saxophones for me, and I'm in their magazine ads and stuff. It looks old, but it's only about 3 years old.
Okay.
I kind of use and hopefully not abuse it, but I clock in a lot of hours on it, so...
You still collect saxophones?
I have a pretty sizable saxophone collection.
I heard 60.
It's more than that now because the New York Times about 5-6 years ago did a really nice article, and I've picked up a few more since then. So luckily, my wife's own is awesome and very understanding, and but at this point, I'm real happy with the ones I have, and I'm planning on keeping a couple super rare ones and ones that were, you know, kind of given to me by, you know, well-known people that have since passed away. But I am, you know, slowly starting to sell off.
So. We're going to got to wrap it up. But one owned by Cannonball Adderley? Is that right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a pretty cool one.
Did you take those out and play? Or do you?
I once in a while, not a lot. But yeah, that King Silver Sonic is a really rare, special one.
Any gigs you want to promote got coming up?
The tour of Japan, the Cotton Club in Blue Notes in Tokyo, the Bonafide gig April 29th in New York, James Beard Awards at Formentos, that's like November 1st, a long time for night, the Wednesday late nights at the Green Mill. So, a bunch of cool stuff coming up.
Thank you for coming in, Frank Catalano.
Thanks, Dave.
And give us the website one more time before we sign it.
CatalanoMusic.com.